We're doing a Tivot Shalom on the Parsha. The topic is, what was the sin of Mei Meriva? Hashem tells Moshe and Aaron, Yandom and Tembi, because you didn't believe in me, Lakdisheni le'nei b'nei Yisrael, to sanctify me in the eyes of the sons of Israel, Lachem lo tavi utak al hazeh la'aretz asher natati lehem, therefore I swear, you will not bring this congregation to the land I've given them. Bechet Mei Meriva rabu adiktukim v'atmiot. In the sin of the waters where there was a fight, so there are so many places where we can look closely and see nuances, dikdukim, and so many questions. Maya kodelachet, what did they do so bad? Vereshit kashem adua birfidim miyad achar tzitam imitzrayim kasher lo yamayim lishtot ha'am tziva kadosh baruch hu v'ikita b'tzur v'yatzum minu mayim. The first question is, how come when we left Egypt, we come to a place called Refidim? We just left Egypt, there's no water to drink, and there Hashem tells Moshe, hit the rock, water will come out. Hainu, shaya nes al yedei ka'a b'sela. There, the miracle actually happened by hitting the rock. V'lo ekpitchi al yedei dibul dafka. Hashem didn't say you should talk to the rock specifically. V'ilu kan, but here, haitak padai sheyei dafka al yedei dibul. Here, Hashem says, no, I want you to talk to the rock. What happened? Od tzich biu. Further, we have to clarify. What does the verse mean? You didn't believe in me to sanctify me before the eyes of Israel. You guys all asked this earlier tonight. What's the difference if you spoke to the rock or hit the rock? Why is this more of a sanctification of Hashem's name before the eyes of Israel than that? Getting water out of a rock is supernatural. It doesn't matter if you spoke to the rock or hit the rock. It's a miracle. What's so special about talking to the rock? When they didn't do that, so Hashem says, it's like you didn't believe in me, you didn't sanctify me. So that's question number two. Question number one is why the change? Question number two is what's the difference? Question number three, why in fact did Moshe hit the rock? Hashem did tell him, talk to the rock. Why in fact did he hit the rock? And especially the verse says he hit the rock twice. What was Moshe's intention here? Number four. We have to understand, what was the punishment here? Hashem says, you didn't sanctify me, therefore I swear you won't bring the crowd into the land. It seems to be there's a correlation. You did this, so the result is that. What's the connection between what they did wrong and telling them they can't enter the land of Israel? How are the two connected? So in the holy work, Noam Elimelech, the Noam Elimelech asks, Rabbi Elimelech, me? The Jans. He asks, it seems like Hashem agreed to Moshe, because you see, when he hit the rock, water did come out, a lot of water. Hashem made the same miracle with hitting as Hashem would have done by speaking. If this was in contradiction to the will of Hashem, Hashem wouldn't make a miracle for a lie. You see, the Shechina did agree with Moshe. There's a Hasidic concept that the tzaddik's limbs refuse to act in discord with the will of Hashem. Our sages said that when a person is righteous, Hashem doesn't allow them to make mistakes, so to speak. Obviously, we're all human. Their limbs are drawn to doing the will of Hashem. And they find it difficult. They have an internal aversion to doing something that's against the will of Hashem. Based on this, it's explained what it says about Avram. It says Avram sent his hand to sacrifice his son. Why does it say he sent his hand to sacrifice his son? It seems superfluous. Seems like the Torah speaks with extra length. Avram extended his hand to take the knife to slaughter his son. היה שלא ישחוט את יצחק, because really Hashem didn't want him to do it. והעבריו של אברהם נמנעו מלעשות נגד רצון השם, so his limbs had a natural aversion to doing it. אברהם אבינו had to force his hand to do it. לכך הייתה היד מנועה מכך את המאכלת. It was as though he kept trying and his hand refused to take the knife. והיה צריך לקוף את ידו. He had to force his hand and extend it against its will. לקח את המאכלת to take the knife. וזה שנאמר וישלח אברהם את ידו, היינו ששלחה בעל כוחה. That's what the pasuk is telling us. So this is a tremendous insight. Avram's about to take the knife and his hand won't go. So Avram could say, well, obviously this isn't the will of Hashem because my limbs are yelling, don't do it. And Avram doesn't do that because the tzaddik doesn't know, is this a test? Maybe the reason my hand finds it hard is because I'm partial. I don't want to do this. Wow. But Hashem commanded me, so I'm going to do it.
He doesn't know he's on that level. He can't like...
He has no explanation why his hand doesn't want to, because from his perspective, this is what Hashem told him to do. So even though internally he feels it's wrong, he goes ahead and he says, but this I think this is what I'm supposed to do. What am I supposed to do? I think this is what Hashem told me, so I think this is what I'm supposed to do. You know, it's funny. I just last night I had this conversation with my wife. We were discussing something, and I said to her, you should just know emotionally, I really don't want to do this. But I think this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to do it because I think, you know, according to Allah, that's what I got to do. But on the inside, I'm torn. I'm very unhappy about it. Sometimes we have mitzvos that don't resonate with us. Not every mitzvah feels natural, great, fun. You know, Avraham Avinu was coming to slaughter his son, and our sages say he was crying. You know, when I was a kid, they used to tell me, you should sing as you go to kill Amalek. And I used to say, I don't think so. I don't think so. There are mitzvahs that you do and you don't sing. Avraham Avinu is going to Sheikh Yitzchak and the Medrash says he was crying. It doesn't say he was singing. You can't say every mitzvah is a mitzvah that you're happy to do. Some mitzvot are difficult.
Well, it's also been difficult to have been tested in this way. I mean, not only is the son at this point you know, a grown-up man, that he's maybe, I don't know if he has family at this point. Or something.
No. He's single.
But why would Hashem want to test him in this way? You
know? Right. We had many classes on that. That's an excellent question, right?
But does there always have to be an element of happiness? Because it says in one, like I know the Breslov, they emphasize always being happy, and that it says, I don't remember which parsha, but if you don't serve Hashem with joy, this is like where the curses come.
There's an element, but that doesn't mean there aren't elements of difficulty, of sadness, of hardship. I can give you many examples to this from Halacha and from the Talmud. The Talmud says there are mitzvahs which are difficult. One of the examples the Talmud gives is a chassan comes to his wedding and the kala calls him over before they go into the chuppah or under the chuppah and she says, Ra'iti kashoshana, the Talmud says, I saw a red spot like a rose, meaning I menstruated today, and so we're prohibited. So the chassan's getting married thinking they're going to be together that night, and suddenly she tells him, nope, I'm off limits. So it says, he turns his face away, and she turns her face away, and the lashon of the Talmud is, ve'lo nachash nishacho, ve'lo akrav akatzo. He wasn't bitten by a snake, he wasn't stung by a scorpion, but, you know, that's what he feels like. Right?
Does this also influence the fact that they're not even allowed to give a kiss or something like that?
Correct.
Wow. Very hard that first night, you can imagine.
If they're prohibited, yeah. The don't first week.
To, don't they have to be? Especially
to be the first night. You know?
The first night?
In order to
not if she's...
Right, no. But so what? Don't you have to move the marriage a week later or something?
See, you're a Yemenite. That's the Rambam.
Yeah?
Yeah, that is the Rambam. But we don't rule that way.
Yeah, it's embarrassing for the woman.
Right? We don't rule that way. Maybe Yemenites did this, I don't know. But in Halacha Lemaisa, the world does not do that. What the Yemenites did, you'll have to find out.
In the end, it might be equally hard for the woman to be...
Not equally hard.
I don't know. Okay. Well,
ולאור זה צריך ביור איך ייתכן שמשה רבנו עליו השלום עשה כנגד רצון השם. ולאור זה צריך ביור איך ייתכן שמשה רבנו עליו השלום עשה כנגד רצון השם. So, based on what we just understood, that there's a certain natural inclination that a tzaddik has to move his limbs in accordance with Hashem's will. So then how did Moshe do something that was against Hashem's will? V'ech hikta yado tasele. How did his hand hit the rock? V'yesh leva'er b'viyur ha'inyan. So we can explain here. T'inei kimkubal mitzadikei emet, haklal b'inyanei emunah v'bitachon, emetai tzrich lasot ishtadlut, v'emetai en tzrich l'shum ishtadlut, harei ze talui lefi yerech emunah v'bitachon sheyesh lo. The rule that the Kabbalists tell us is that the rule of emunah and bitachon is that it depends on the person. That when a person is on a higher level of emunah and bitachon, they don't have to work so hard. And when a person is on a lower level, then they have to work harder. Kasher yesh li yehudi beirut emunah v'bitachon shehakadosh baruch hu vaday yazor lo. When a Jew has clarity and he says, Hashem runs the world and he's going to help me even though I don't work at it. He's on the level that it says about Chizkiah. Chizkiah says to Hashem, I go to sleep at night and you take care of it. Right? Chizkiah goes to sleep that night and an angel comes out and the next morning the whole army that's standing at his gates are dying of a plague. Samuchu batuach shbilo shum safek HaKadosh Baruch Hu yazor lo. Chizkiyo can go to sleep at night because he's fully confident that Hashem is helping him. Az be'emet ono tzrich lasot klum. So in truth, he doesn't have to do anything. VaKadosh Baruch Hu vaday yazor lo. And Hashem undoubtedly does help him. Ve'ilu im en emunato kol kach bira, but if his emunah is not so clear, mitkashe lachzik be'emunah sheyeshua tavo gam b'lo sheyaseh me'uma, and he has a hard time believing that things will work out even if he doesn't do anything. So then the salvation really won't come unless he works at it. And if after he does a little bit, he's still not confident. And he senses that the amount that he did is really not enough. So then it's incumbent upon him to do more. If he feels like what I did now is not enough, who says it's going to work? So then he better do more. But when a person has confidence and it's clear to him that Hashem's running the show and it's going to work out right, and he's not at all worried about it, so then he doesn't need any ishtadlut. Because of his clarity, so then he'll get what he wants. And based on this, they explained what it says by Yaakov Avinu. He's sending the tribes down to the governor of Egypt, this Tzofnas Panech, this tough new king who's there under Pharaoh. We know it's Yosef, but he doesn't. And he tells his sons, bring a little bit of the spices and honey of Israel. Why did he tell his kids to take a little of each thing? You're sending a gift to the king. You should send a lot. You're sending a gift to the king. Why was he so careful to tell them, take a small gift? What Yaakov was telling them is, it seems like it was decreed in heaven that we do have to work at this a little bit. But we should show heaven, okay, if we have to try, we'll try, but we're not trying too hard. Because when Hashem wants to give us salvation, it's not contingent on how hard you work. So we'll only do a little bit of the spices, a little bit of the honey. And in the holy work, Bat Ein, it says in the name of the holy Zohar, it says in the Pasuk, have faith in Hashem and do good. You'll live in the land and you'll see emunah. That the strength of meriting the land of Israel is through bitachon. And that's why the Pasuk says, have faith in Hashem, bitach b'Hashem ma'asei tov. And then, what's the continuation of the Pasuk? Shchon eretz u'emunah. Then you'll be able to settle in the land. Bitachon allows you to live in the land. It's fascinating. We had guests from Chutz La'aretz last week. And one of the guests said to me, they said, you know, in this country, people have bitachon. Wherever you go, people have such faith in their Ribono Shel Olam, and it doesn't matter if they're wearing a yarmulke or not wearing a yarmulke. I have a friend who was a top soldier in the secret units, in the intelligence units. And he once said to me, he said, when you get to the upper echelons of the intelligence units, everyone's saying the same thing. This country is not going to last. There's no way we can last. He said to me, anyone that knows what's really going on in the upper echelons of the intelligence units, we look around and we say there's no natural explanation how this country can last. And yet we all keep building, and we all keep living here. None of us packs our bags and leaves. We all keep, it's only Emunah. He said to me, there's nothing else keeping us here. There's nothing. And if you think about the history of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, our history here, you read about it, it's mind-boggling. It's the bitachon, the emunah that people had to come here and to stay here, it's just mind-boggling. So he's telling us, yeah, so there's no other way.
In general, every Israeli has quite a bit of emunah, in other words.
I think so. I think it's been a double-edged sword, because sometimes the government works in ways that are less responsible with a certain emunah. Yeah. It's going to work out, where you ask yourself, why do you think it's going to work out? You know, when people asked intelligent questions about the pullout from Gush Katif, the answer was, it'll work, and it didn't.
Good question. Emunah is a constant progression or a positive advancement, or does it decrease, diminish, fluctuate?
It definitely fluctuates, and that's part of what he's saying over here. That we'll hear him out in a second. He's going to get to that. It for sure fluctuates, and I would add that it's a choice we make.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it.
It's a constant choice.
Because I've been getting more and more into emunah.
Just off topic, it's the train. Does anyone know what time the train stops?
Probably around 12, no?
If you want to catch it, you should go now.
Is this going to be on tomorrow, by any chance?
So, the Netivot Shalom is taking a specific direction, which is a Hasidic direction. Those of you who have been around know that we've also been learning the Chazon Ish, Emunah u'Bitachon, and his direction is very different than the direction that the Netivot Shalom is taking. For example, the Chazon Ish writes that Emunah does not include in any way the belief that things will be good. Who told you? Maybe it'll be tough. The Chazon Ish stresses that Emunah is the belief that Hashem controls everything that happens, and Hashem can make anything happen at any given moment, and I realize that. I do my ishtadlut with a knowledge that he runs the show. But he didn't guarantee me life's going to be fun. He didn't guarantee me that I'll get the outcome I want. There's no guarantee in Emunah, says the Chazon Ish, that it's going to be good. I'll read you the Chazon Ish.
So basically, the life is not perfect.
Uno momento. Let's read the Chazon Ish.
Negative events, but also that might be a struggle.
Yeah, but
right?
You see, that's what negative events are. Like, if they come from Hashem, they have to be good, even if you don't see them as good.
I'm
reading the Chazon Ish, the beginning of the second chapter of Emunah and Bitachon. Ta'ut noshenet, an ancient mistake, nitazrecha belev rabim, has taken hold. Nitazrecha means it's become a citizen, so to speak, a steady in the hearts of many, b'musag bitachon, in this concept of bitachon, shem bitachon hamshamesh lemidah muhulala v'ikarit b'fi hasidim, the term bitachon, which is actually so elevated and fundamental in the mouths of the chasidim, nistoveva b'musag chova la'amin, it has evolved to become a concept that you must believe b'chol mikre shepugesh ha'adam, in any instance you encounter, v'amidato likrat atid bilti mukhra v'shnei drachim ba'atid, when you're standing facing an uncertain future where there are two possible outcomes, achat tova v'lo shnia, and only one of those outcomes is good, ki betach yatov, people make the mistake of thinking emunah means, bitachon means you have a confidence that the outcome will be good. And if you suspect maybe the outcome won't be good, then you're lacking in your bitachon. ואין ההוראה הזו בביטחון נכונה. וחזון איש says, that's not what ביטחון means. שכל שלא נתברר בנבואה גורל העתיד, אין העתיד מוכרע. If a prophet didn't tell you it's going to be good, you have no idea what's yet to come. כי מי יודע משפטי השם וכמולותיו יתברך? Who knows how Hashem works and who deserves what? We stand facing an outcome and we know what we want. And then there's this misconception, says the Chazon Ish. If you have bitachon, you believe everything will be good. Who told you? You have any inclination? You have any understanding of what Hashem's thinking? Of what payback you deserve and he deserves and they deserve? Bitachon is, I know Hashem's running the show. I know there's a plan. But that doesn't mean I know how Hashem's running the show or what his plan is. Those are two different things. He says, people think bitachon means it's going to be good. Well, he said Hasidim believe that, and now we're learning a Hasidic work. Because you guys are asking a bunch of questions, so I'm pointing out that your questions are in line with the Chazon Ish. But I wasn't intending to bring up the Chazon Ish, because now we're trying to understand the Nativot Shalom. And there are different approaches in life. And right now we're learning the approach of the Hasidut.
I don't even know what bitachon is.
So we discussed that. That's the book Emunah Bitachon. But now we're coming back to the Nativot Shalom. He says, living in Israel is contingent on Bitachon. And I don't think he's defining Bitachon the way the Chazon Ish is.
How does Bitachon relate to Emunah, sorry? Is it part of Emunah?
According to the Chazon Ish or according to the Nativot Shalom?
According to what we're learning right now. It's part of having a Bitachon is needs Emunah, and Emunah doesn't need Bitachon, or vice versa.
He seems to be saying that Bitachon is the confidence that Hashem's helping me. Hashem is helping me and will help me.
So you need before that an understanding of Emunah, no?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
The more you have Emunah and Bitachon, that Hashem will undoubtedly help you, he says, this is the Nativot Shalom, the less you have to do about it. The more you really believe that Hashem is running the show and he will help you. And based on this, they also explain, again, we're coming to the Hasidic approach, which the Chazon Ish also mentioned that the Hasidim have a different approach. He calls it a mistake. Okay, but we're learning the Hasidim now. Okay. And based on this approach, they explain the pasuk that says, you will live in confidence in the land of Israel with bitachon. That your living in Israel is contingent on your bitachon. The more you have bitachon, that Hashem's taking care of things and everything will be okay, the more you'll be able to live here without any fears. Again, look at his definition of bitachon, look at the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish says that's not bitachon, it's a Hasidic mistake. He names the Hasidim. So I quote it.
What's the exact difference between the two so far?
The Chazon Ish says bitachon does not involve a confidence that the outcome will be good.
Like the Gabbai Negev said, yeah.
And then Nativot Shalom says it does.
You have to have the two.
That bitachon is that he said.
If it's not, you don't have it.
כאשר יש ליהודי בהירות האמונה והביטחון שהקדוש ברוך הוא ודאי יעזור לו, that Hashem will undoubtedly help him.
Okay.
And the Chazon Ish says, bitachon doesn't mean you have any concept of what Hashem will do.
Okay, that's very good, thank you.
And Nativot Shalom says, bitachon includes a concept Hashem will help me. And Chazon Ish says, no, Hashem's running the show, but you have no idea what he's going to do to you. Okay. But we're learning Nativot Shalom. I wasn't intending to bring in the Chazon Ish. You guys are questioning. So the inheritance of the land of Israel stems from the strength of Bitachon. And once we understand that, we can now turn to the story of Moshe Rabbeinu and Mei Meriva. Hashem tells him, talk to the rock. And the idea of talking to the rock is, you will do nothing. Hitting the rock is action. Talking is not action. That's a concept we find in halacha often. Hashem tells Moshe, go talk to the rock. And now the Nativot Shalom says, big chidush, he says, Moshe Rabbeinu thought the Jews were not on such a high level, and that if he's going to do small hishtadlut, it won't. And so he did an action. And he didn't just talk. And he hit the rock twice. And that's an indication of a lot of hishtadlut. And that's because he felt they were on a very low level of bitachon. And that's what Moshe tells them. Shimuna hamorim. You guys are rebelling. You're not on a high level of bitachon.
Bitachon in the Hasidic sense
here? Yeah.
Okay.
They're coming complaining. We have no water. Where's your confidence that Hashem's taking care of you? So when they had just left Egypt, Hashem tells Moshe, hit the rock. The Divrei Shmuel says, Moshe Rabbeinu said a kal vachomer. He says, if after we left Egypt, and the sea was split, and the Jews had just witnessed tremendous miracles and prophecies, and the Jews didn't seem to have any sins with them at that point. They seemed to have been elevated so high. And Hashem tells me, hit the rock. Certainly now, they sinned with the golden calf. They sinned with the miraglim. They're on such a low level, for sure, they're not fitting to a miracle that water will just come because I stand there and talk. But Hashem didn't mean that. Hashem wanted to show His love and His closeness to the nation, that even when they're not on such a high level, Moshe assessed the situation correctly. They weren't on a high level. Hashem wanted to show them, I can give you something even though you're not worthy of it.
Is the lesson here also, it's okay to ask?
I'm with you.
It's in the Torah, right? Moshe did it, okay. But what's the lesson? The lesson is that sometimes if you have betachon, any Jew, any person in that group of people there, thirsty, could have reached out and asked for help by asking, not by hitting any rocks, even by speaking to a rock. It's not, you know, the main thing, but just asking.
Very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Though. Very nice. It's not what he's saying, but it's still
Moshe,
a nice
Moshe, thing. Moshe, of course, is what Huda looked for help from. He should solve all their problems like that, you know. But what if they had each asked for it instead, directly?
I hear.
So the lesson is here, he hit the rock, but there was a lesson by him hitting the rock, you know. Could have asked, right? That's what he just said. Everyone could have asked.
Very nice.
Technical question. Did Hashem command Moshe to talk to the rock in front of the nation or in private? Or do we not know that?
We're told that in general the prophecies were given to Moshe in private. I think it's the first Rashi in the book of Vayikra, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Hashem wanted to show them that even when they're on a low level, Hashem could give great revelation on their behalf. Hashem said, talk to the rock, so that they see that even though they're not worthy of it, I will come and show myself on a much higher level. Mm. And Moshe assessed their level correctly. Mm. He didn't assess his task as a prophet correctly, his task to talk. He says, we can explain it another way, that before they received the Torah, the way to overcome evil was like hitting, through taking force, through fasting, through doing things that were abrasive to oneself to overcome their desires. And that's why when they hit Rephidim, Hashem tells Moshe, hit the rock. That alludes to the idea that you want to overcome the improper inclinations from within, you use an equal and opposite force. But now they received the Torah. The strength of Torah is... Torah is the spice of the improper inclinations. So Torah helps us overcome evil without fighting it, but with spicing it, with guiding it. And so here Hashem tells him, talk to the rock, because you are now given the power of speech. Speech, the Torah speaks to the soul of a Jew. And by speaking correctly, by talking Torah, so then you can overcome what's wrong from within, what's evil, what's an improper inclination, through speech, through Torah, through education. You no longer need the stick.
And this is for all generations.
Okay.
You don't need the stick.
So, based on this concept, we can understand even better. If the power for entering the land of Israel is through bitachon, like the Zohar writes, that from the strength of bitach b'shem, you merit to lishkon eretz, to live in the land, So then the will of Hashem was to uplift them to the level of Bitachon before they enter the land of Israel. Remember, we're holding the last few months before they enter Israel. And the idea is so that they will be uplifted and they will be able to inherit the land. And so Hashem tells them, talk to the rock. That's a higher level of Bitachon. You don't have to do anything. Stand there and talk. When they had just left Egypt, they were not yet headed for the land of Israel. They were going to receive the Torah. They weren't on that high level. They didn't need that high level of Bitachon. It was enough to hit the rock. Now, this is the generation that's about to enter the land of Israel. And so Hashem says, talk to the rock. That's a higher level of Bitachon. Show them that without doing a thing, the water is going to come out. Moshe was thinking, they're not on a level. I'm going to talk, nothing's going to happen. And I can't bring them up to the level. I'm trying. I'm bringing them to the rock. And what are they doing? They're arguing with me. They're saying, no, that rock. Moshe, hit that rock. Talk to that rock. They're fighting with me. Where are they holding? They're so rebellious. How am I going to, when they're on that level, how can I make water come out by just talking? So.
Has it been hard to concentrate on?
Right. So this, says the Tivot Shalom, was the transgression of Moshe. Because deep down inside, every Jew has bitachon, a complete bitachon in Hashem. All you have to do is uncover it. But deep down inside, it's there. And that's why the grandfather of Lechowitz wrote that when a Jew sees that his emunah is foggy, and he doesn't have clear emunah or bitachon in Hashem, so then a Jew has to believe that he believes. When you see you're not connected, you have to believe that you believe. He says, a person has to tell himself over and over again, even though I don't sense emunah right now, but deep down in my soul, ani ma'amin, I do, because I'm a Jew. And by a Jew, emunah is a part of who I am. It's a part of the root of my soul. And this is one of the fundamental concepts of the Jew, of the Jew's emunah, that he believes that even though right now things are not so clear to me, but deep down inside I do. This is a very, very interesting concept. You're not sure? Remind yourself that deep down inside you are.
Can I ask you maybe
just a second? Okay. Let's just finish the idea. And the grandfather of Slonim said, sometimes the clouds cover the light of emunah. Emunah is like the light of a sun. And even on a foggy day, the sun still has the same light. The clouds make it that you can't see its light. So too is the emunah in the heart of the Jew. Even if right now you don't sense it, because there are clouds covering it, but deep down inside it's there. It's always giving its strong light. Just the sun has its same light like midday, all day. You don't always see it. And that's the idea that Hashem wanted to instill in Am Yisrael before they enter the land of Israel. To believe that they believe, even though they were on a lower level, they didn't sense that they believed. They were coming to Moshe in panic mode. What's going to be, Moshe? There's no water. Moshe, we're going to die. Hashem wanted them to know, deep down inside, you don't feel that way. Deep down inside, you're on a different level. And if you can recognize that you're on a different level, then you're fit to enter the land of Israel. And that's why Hashem tells Moshe, talk to the rock. Remind them that deep down inside, they have bitachon. I have to tell you that your idea, Yaakov, keeps ringing in my mind. The idea, if we take it to what happened, they came with force. They came to Moshe being argumentative. Mm-hmm. And in fact, had they spoken gently, not the stick, but the speech,
no, I was
they would have gotten the same place.
I meant something else, actually. I meant that they should all ask Hashem. My idea was that they should ask Hashem. Actually.
Also good.
But asking Moses is also good, but that would have been nice also, because they're so far looking to him a lot. But really, this is an exercise in them learning how to ask for Hashem instead.
Kibalti. So Hashem says, teach them about what's going on deep down inside them. That great bitachon and emunah that's really there inside. Even if they're not going to work hard, even if the clouds are covering, the sun has that light. And that's why Hashem tells Moshe, Yan lo emantem bi l'akdisheni le'bnei b'nei Yisrael. you could have instilled within them this emuna, the emuna that they have emuna. And by not doing that, so then, on the contrary, you weakened their ability to conquer the land of Israel. So you, Moshe, viewed them on a lower level of bitachon. Talking to the rock is not something that's right for them right now. They can't inherit the land of Israel with that level of bitachon. That's why his punishment was that he can't enter the land of Israel. Because, in fact, he was supposed to be instrumental in bringing them to that level where they would be able to. This is all the direction that Netivot Shalom is taking. Okay, we have one last paragraph. He says, how did Moshe's limbs do an act that was against the will of Hashem? Because, in essence, Hashem didn't want Moshe entering the land of Israel. So his limbs were coinciding with another aspect of Hashem's will. It says that if Moshe would have entered the land of Israel and built the Beit HaMikdash, so then whatever Moshe did was eternal. And it was never taken over by the enemies. So the Beit HaMikdash couldn't have been destroyed. And Hashem knew that we wouldn't stay on the level we should be. We would transgress. And Hashem says, let me destroy the temple and not the people. Let my anger go out against stones and wood instead of the people. And so Hashem didn't want Moshe entering the land of Israel so that the temple would not be built by him. And so Moshe's limbs, in fact, went in accordance with the will of Hashem that Moshe should not be able to enter the land of Israel. That's the pshat that he offers.